Okay, so I ran through the intro and yada, 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 but I forgot the third switch. There we go. Yeah. So we got audio now. Well, you know, someday I'll have a producer. I was just all excited to get to the microphone. I get that way sometimes. Well, you know, the intro and all of that stuff will be on the podcast. You've heard it before. But what you didn't hear was me saying, and this part I got to do again. As noted, I will not be behind the microphone next week. We're going to Washington, D.C. to work on the ACAC. We're going to be presenting over 200,000 petition signatures to various and sundry members of the House and Senate. And so in order not to get into an ungodly hole, we're going to try to raise this week's and next week's horn funds all in 1 week. I know it seems like a tall order, but it's really the only alternative we have. Yeah, third switch is thrown. Should be getting to you guys any minute now. Good. Okay, it's getting out there. So anyway, it would seem almost an insurmountable task to try to raise 2 weeks' funds in 1 week. But I like to hope that it isn't. Because we've had something pretty amazing take place. We need to raise $2,000 between now and Friday. That's 2 weeks worth of fundraising. We're going to be able to do it. And here's how. Thanks to generous, considerate members of the Horn Family Commune congregation, there is already on the table $800 in matching contributions. You got that? $800. So we will have a matching challenge every night this week. Tonight, there is $300 on the table to match the first 300 that come in. That match is courtesy of Chris in Germany and courtesy of Barbie. Hi, Barbie. Hi, Chris. Barbie in Iowa. So every dollar that comes in this evening, up to $300, will get matched, doubled, in fact. And then there's a matching challenge for Tuesday. Wednesday, being the first day of July, will be Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, which is the first of every month. And there is a matching challenge on Thursday and a matching challenge on Friday, and who knows but what more may develop. This can be done. $2,000, 5 days. It can happen. And then that way I'll have everything paid up and nice and even, and we'll be able to go off to D.C. And listen, there are no guarantees on this, no promises. But you know me, I can't leave home without the mobile broadcast rig. So I'm taking it with me. If it is possible at all, in the evening, if we're not completely worn out, if it's at all possible to get on the air from our seedy little motel room 50 miles outside D.C., we will. I will. And hopefully, and you know, we'll be able to run Skype and all of that stuff, and so we'll have We'll have one line for, oh, heck, maybe I'll even take the stress line gizmo with me, too. Who knows? Thereby proving the full mobility of this program. But it all begins tonight with raising $300 to match $300 in challenges that are out there right now. We'll worry about tomorrow, and Wednesday, and Thursday, and Friday. But it all begins with raising $300 tonight. No, Jesus is not going to call me home if we don't. Because, frankly, well, I don't think he wants me up there. But that's how it works. So, you know where the PayPal interface is. It's at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And your kind contribution will be matched dollar for dollar up to the first 300. Don't worry about some of the nosier parts of the interface. Doesn't matter. You know, your second grade teacher's shoe size, screw that. Just put in enough data to get to the next screen. That's where you make all your PayPal decisions. If you don't like PayPal, there's always the U.S. Postal Service. And if you want to do it that way, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801, with the kind reminder and the gentle reminder that checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid never sees them. That's all stuff. That's the magic that Boss Man Wayne does when he puts on his spider-proof gloves and reaches into the echo chamber that passes for The Horn mailbox. By the way, thanks going out to our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown. He has nuptials upcoming, Paul does. And I was tickled to hear about those. And hopefully there will be photos and much merriment. Paul got us started this evening. So I guess technically we have $225 to go. Okay. So we've gotten that all out of the way. If by some miracle it was to just, we were to get done, I'd shut up about it for the rest of the evening, which I would love to do. Oh, and one other little program note. This evening, we will be, there will be kind of a programmus interruptus, although not really. At about quarter after the third hour of the program here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, at quarter after 8 p.m., I will be connecting to the Ian Masters program on KPFK and about 100 other stations around the United States to discuss today's Supreme Court ruling regarding the Environmental Protection Agency and the fact that apparently Uncle Nino Fat Tony Scalia doesn't think that air is really that important for us air-breathing humans. I mean, you know, what's a little bit? Say you're breathing a little bit of mercury. Say you're a little bit more stupid tomorrow than you was today. So what if your little baby in the womb there? I mean, I'm pro-life and everything, but so what if your little baby in the womb there comes out, not so sharp? I mean, it's not like he was ever going to do much anyway. Yeah, because he's a pro. He's not like me and mine. No. So we'll be talking about, but I'll be in my serious mode, and I won't be doing my Uncle Nino impression. However, I have a feeling we may be hearing a little bit from Uncle Nino later in the evening. And thanks anonymously to the anonymous person who just took us down to 175 to go on the evening. That's huge. And it's a great start. Hopefully other folks will jump in behind our anonymous, our kind anonymous, and our friend Paul from Parts Unknown. And we'll get this out of the way fairly quickly. Down to 150. Thank you, Texas Betsy. Thank you very kindly. 150 to go. Now, oh, that's interesting. Thank you. This just in from our buddy Thomas, otherwise known as Jug of Punch. It is he is calling it the Our Cup Runneth Over Challenge. Thomas says, I will match any contribution that exceeds your daily challenge for this week up to $200. So that means if we get past $300, Thomas is going to match it. If we get to 310, it'll be 320. 350, it'll be 4. But through the week, up to $200. So conceivably, wow, we could put a big dent in it just this evening alone. So 150 to go to reach the 300 mark. So anyway, about a quarter after 8, be a quarter after 5 on the Pacific Coast, we'll be interrupting the program to talk with Ian Masters. It's kind of fun, though, because in this case, I won't be doing the interviewing. I'll be getting interviewed. But y'all will get to hear it, as well as Ian's audience. Now, that brings us to where we are this evening. And it's only 15 minutes after 6. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know where we are this evening, right? Sure. Yeah.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Right here, behind this thin, cybernetic veil of canvas, you will hear Morans of all description. Right-wing Morans, Ninther Morans, Birther Morans, Deather Morans, Tenther Morans, Bircher Morans, Bagger Morans, Booger-Eaten Morans, Libertarian Morans, Republican Morans, Morans of all shapes, sizes, and varieties, and even the occasional Moran that doesn't fit into any of those general categories. Yes, indeed, you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this here's the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Now, do be careful when you step behind the thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Keep children, small animals, cats, dogs, guinea pigs, close to your person, as well as purses and European messenger bags, as being Republicans and right-wingers and conservatives, they can get grabby. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Head for the hills or you will be up to your armpits in Morans.
Oh, and ain't it the truth. We got us some Confederate Morans this evening. We got us some upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Morans this evening. And yes, it is that time of the evening, as Steve reminds us by email, this is the part where I say, wait, let me look in the chat room. Yeah, there he is. Calliope, 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 Tim, Calliope. You're mean, Steve. You're just mean. No, but okay. So this may be a little bit mean in my own right, but I gotta say that our lead Moran nominee might be, and your input is more than welcome on this. Our lead moron nominee might be us. Oh, Lordy, didn't we get took in? Because we did. There we were on Thursday celebrating the fact that some several millions of American citizens were not going to be deprived of their access to health care. And then there we were on Friday celebrating the fact that a whole bunch of Americans are going to be able to get married and be treated just the same as every other American under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we was real happy, wasn't we? And we were kind of left scratching our funny little heads, going, wait a minute. Usually they drop the nasty stuff on the last day and head for the border. But these are the right decisions. I mean, you even had fulminative Scalia there in both instances. And I guess maybe I'm the moron. Maybe everybody else is going, wait, the other shoe's about to drop. But not me. Oh, no, I was basking in the celebratory glow of equality and access to health care. And I got up this morning and, hey, look, we got screwed. Uh-huh.
What do I mean?
Well, I'm talking about Michigan versus EPA. Because you might recall that the Environmental Protection Agency, whose name, curiously, is the Environmental Protection Agency and not the cost-benefit analysis agency, one would, yeah, we've got an organization that does that. It's what do we call it? The GAO. Used to stand for the General Accounting Office, but once Dim Leader engaged in his reign of error, the name of that organization was changed to the General Accountability Office because it makes it sound like we're making government be accountable because it's your money, even though we're going to use your money to start an illegal war in the Iraq, such as. But no, we got the Congressional Budget Office. They score stuff all the time. They just got a bunch of nebbishy little guys and women sitting around with the well sharpened pencils. Okay, so they use computers now. I like the image. And they do cost analysis and accounting stuff that I don't understand. But the name of the Environmental Protection Agency is the Environmental Protection Agency because its primary mission is protecting the environment. Yes. Not anymore. Because, see, back when the Environmental Protection Agency tried to protect the environment by doing something about the massive amounts of, arsenic and particulate matter and mercury and crap like that, that spews out of America's vomitous coal-fired power plants every minute, every second of every day, of every week, of every month, of every year. Well, they promulgated them some rules. Now, here's what's interesting. Along the way, they did do some calculating. You know what they calculated? That by tightening the amount of poison that the coal-fired power plants and other power plants would be allowed to pump into the air, well, it turns out that they were going to save the country some several billions of dollars and along the way save some several tens of thousands of lives. People who would get to go on being alive instead of dying prematurely because of all the filth and crap that coal-fired power plants pump into the air. Minute after minute, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. Mm-hmm. Well, the state of Michigan and a whole bunch of other right-wing knobs sued the EPA on the novel legal theory that the primary mission of the EPA should be penny-pinching and worrying about the tender financial fifis of the one percenters who run all these power plants and their various and sundry stockholders, because, well, you know, every time a coal-fired power plant stockholder cries, God kills a kitten. Oh, really? That's what happened. The Supreme Court, by a 5-4 decision, featuring, of course, the usual suspects, Uncle Nino, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, John Roberts, Clarence Coke Can Slappy Thomas, and, of course, that Kennedy kid, who just loves to be the center of attention, being the swinging vote. Hey, you hep cats, let's swing. Fat Tony, Uncle Nino, maybe I should just start referring to him as Uncle Nino. I don't want to engage in any size shaming. I'll try to remember that. I've just been calling him Fat Tony for so long. I mean, that goes way back to Bart Cop. That's stolen. But the EPA has long known that, and science has long known, that mercury is not good for you. And neither is arsenic. And neither are any of the other particulate the toxins that come out of smokestacks and wind up in people's lungs. And the EPA did its job. And even at the circuit court level, the circuit court agreed with the EPA and told a bunch of teabagging attorneys generals to hit the bricks. Which they then did. And they hit the bricks and went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, where they had a little surprise party planned for us. Oh, there we were dancing in the streets. We had our rainbow flags and all our little icons on Facebook and Twitter had rainbows on them, and people who still had health care were scheduling doctor's office visits that they'd needed but didn't know if they could afford until after the ruling came down. And we spent the weekend celebrating with a side of sadness with the memory of the white wing slaughter in Charleston still fresh in our memories. Yeah. And then today, getting up with a wee bit of a, oh, I don't know, a kind of a constitutional rights hangover, we got this. Oh, we got more than this. We got they let Sammy Bad Breath write an opinion, too, and apparently he's the Peter Lorre of the court, because in the meeting it was something along the lines of, no, really, I can't wait. I want to write the death penalty case about how Oklahoma can make people die. Yes, you really despise me, don't you? Yes, yes, Sammy, we do. Because, remember, the Constitution says cruel and unusual, not cruel or unusual. No, you see, we're cruel to people all the time. Governments are cruel to people all over the country. All the time. That is pretty goddamn cruel, isn't it, to take away a person's food out of their mouths and cut their food stamps to less than a dollar a day per person. That's pretty cruel. And but it isn't unusual, and we do unusual things to people as well. Very, very unusual things. Yes, indeed. Right. But it has to be both. And, well, it's not cruel and unusual to use a drug that's insufficient to render somebody unconscious when you're about to kill them in the name of the state, and let them be nice and awake when you give them the drugs that cause real unmitigated agony like they do in Oklahoma. And we in the Supreme Court, we say Oklahoma is okay. Yeah, that happened today, too. Mm-hmm. But the Michigan versus EPA case is really troubling, because as difficult as it may be to believe, and until there is sufficient evidence to the contrary, even John Roberts, even Uncle Nino, even Coke Can Slappy Thomas, even Sammy Bad Breath, even that Kennedy guy, attention whore that he is, they all breathe air. Until such time it is satisfactorily proven beyond a reasonable doubt that they are pod people, well, they all breathe air. But apparently they are far enough away from coal-fired power plants that they don't worry about breathing the air that, you know, us proles breathe. Did I say read? I meant breathe. They breathe the good air, while people downwind of coal-fired power plants wonder why their babies are born with arms coming out of their heads. Mm-hmm. So, I at least, am a moron today. Because I completely forgot about this. We do this, progressives, liberals. We get caught up in our little celebrations, and we forget that, right. Mm-hmm. And then we wake up and find out that, because this is the maddening part. Well, let's go to Uncle Nino. Shall we? Do let's. Because he has an opinion on this. It all has to do with Section 7412N1B of the Clean Air Act. That's how arcane this stuff is. But the EPA, well, Uncle Nino says cost is everything. The Clean Air Act treats your power plants differently from other sources for purposes of the Hazardous Air Pollutants Program. Elsewhere in Section 7412, Congress established cabin criteria for EPA to apply when deciding whether to include sources in the program. You know, your sources of your poisons. And your sources of your poisons, well, your poisons come from profits. And your profits are made by creating the poisons. Ergo, cogito ergo sum, Latin, you know. It required the agency to regulate your sources whose emissions exceed specified numerical thresholds, major sources, you know. It also required the agency to regulate your sources whose emissions fall short of these thresholds. Those are called your area sources, if they present a threat of adverse effects to human health or the environment warranting regulation. Bunch of sissy commies worrying about human health instead of money. Worrying about the environment instead of share prices. Bunch of commie, sicko, pinko. In stark contrast, Congress instructed EPA to add power plants to the program if, but only if, the agency finds your regulation appropriate and necessary. One does not need to open up a dictionary, because I have not, in order to realize the capaciousness of this here phrase. In particular, your appropriate is the classic broad. I mean, well, you know, for your classic broads, I think about your Marilyn Monroe and your Jane Mansfield, but no, that ain't what Congress had on its mind. Your classic broad and all-encompassing term that naturally and traditionally includes consideration of all relevant factors. Although this term leaves agencies with flexibility, and I ain't got no flexibility left. I think that's why we didn't have this. That's part of why we didn't have a Sunday gravy again. Although this time leaves agencies with flexibility, an agency may not entirely fail to consider an important aspect of the problem when deciding whether regulation is appropriate. Read naturally, and you don't want to be around when I'm reading naturally. It's not pretty. At least that's what Mrs. Scalia says. The phrase appropriate and necessary requires at least some attention to cost, even though it doesn't. This is the part where I'm making it up because I'm worrying about the shareholders and I'm a conservative Republican and I don't give a tinker's damn what happens to some little black kid down the airstream breathing all this foul filth. Right? Yeah. One would not say that it is even rational, never mind appropriate, to impose billions of dollars in economic costs in return for a few dollars in health or environmental benefits, even if what I'm calling a few dollars is actually also measured in billions of dollars, and in point of fact is also measured in, you know, little 8-year-old asthmatic children who get to be little 9-year-old asthmatic children, and if the air was cleaned up a little bit, might not even be asthmatic children no more. Instead, I'm worrying about monetary cost, which just means that they won't be children anymore, or even people. They'll just be corpses, you know, in the ground. In addition, cost includes more than the expense of complying with your regulations. Any disadvantage could be termed a cost. EPA's interpretation precludes the agency from considering any type of cost, including, for instance, harms that regulation might do to human health or the environment. Even though EPA, by its very nature of its mission, is not engaged usually in trying to impose regulations that do harm human health, but rather that don't. But I'm not really, I ain't much interested in that. I'm just yanking shit out of my ass at this point, and that, too, ain't pretty. The government concedes that if the agency were to find that emissions from power plants do damage to human health, but that the technologies needed to eliminate these emissions do even more damage to human health, it would still deem regulation appropriate, which it would be, because then you'd want to regulate whatever, or maybe you might not even want to do the thing that was harming the human health. But we'd be here, you know, me, my buddy Sammy Bad Brett, John Roberts there with the blue, with the piercing blue eyes, yeah, and the slappy Coke can over there when I can get him away from SpankMeIveBeenNaughty.com and the Kennedy guy who's always sniffing around going, hey guys, do you like me? Do you like me? Yeah, but then if that was the case, we'd be there to get in the way and make sure that nobody interfered with the money, because it's about the money, you know. Because, you know, we're Republicans. What? You surprised? Forget about it. You poor people, you see, are a drag upon society, whereas you wealthy people are the engines of growth and job creation. Right? You understand? Yeah, of course you do. Now, even if you don't understand, nod your little head like you understand, or I have to send somebody around. You understand? Yeah, I hear things. There are undoubtedly settings in which the phrase appropriate and necessary does not encompass cost. But this is not one of them. Because this here involves your coal and your oil industry. And, you know, well, they're a little more American than the rest of you air breathers are. Your Section 7412N1A directs the EPA to determine whether regulation is appropriate and necessary. How many times do I got to say this? The agencies have long treated cost as a centrally relevant factor when deciding whether to regulate. See? Yeah. Whether to regulate? Yeah, how much is it going to cost? Let the little kids die. What's it to me? Consideration of cost reflects the understanding that reasonable regulation ordinarily requires paying attention to the advantages and the disadvantages of agency decisions. Take, for instance, your hillbillies. See, there's an advantage to having coal companies blow up mountains, fill up streams, ruin the place, make it look like a fucking moonscape, don't you know, and then poisoning the hillbillies down there. Because, and the advantage is, they're making money doing it, see? That's how it works. Also, it reflects the reality that too many wasteful expenditures devoted to one problem may well mean considerably fewer resources available to deal effective with other, perhaps more serious problems. Against the backdrop of this established administrative practice, it is unreasonable to read an instruction to an administrative agency to determine whether regulation is appropriate and necessary as an invitation to ignore cost. Which, I might add, there is no evidence that the EPA did. But what we're telling them here is that we want them to regulate, that we want them to consider your cost first. They got to consider the cost first. Not whether or not your little children can be breathing and shit. You remember them little poor children? They're a drain on society. They'd be better off dead. I mean, yeah, sure, I'm pro-life, but that's just till they're born. After that, the poor little fuckers are, you know, a drain on society. So, no, they didn't ignore the cost. Of course they didn't. They just considered it later, after they considered the little breathing people, which is disgusting to me. So, you know, what you got to understand here is that money is more important than people. Money is more important than air. Money is more important than breathing. And thus do we hold, amen, please, can we get out of here? I'm sick of this town. It's summer, it's hot, and I just want to get back to Brooklyn. No, really, that's what it boils down to. The Supreme Court today held that coal companies are more important than people. That coal-fired power plants are more important than the people they allegedly exist to serve. And wow, did that let all the air out of my equality balloon this morning. Because, as I noted, you can get married on Friday in all 50 states. Well, not quite 50 yet. More on that in a minute. And then on Monday, you can be fired from your job in 32 states for being all gay. There's not a damn thing anybody can do about it. At least of all you, Mr. and Mr. Newlywed, or Mrs. and Mrs. Newlywed, Ms. and Ms. Not a damn thing. And, oh, by the way, Mr. and Mr. Newlywed and Ms. Newlywed, maybe you're living downwind from a coal-fired power plant. Congratulations, you're going to keep breathing poison. Because money. What a bunch of suckers we were. Tim from L.A. noting, I too am a moron. I was elated when marriage freedom and the ACA was constitutional, but I totally forgot about the EPA. I wonder, though, when the TPP is in full function, will people realize the danger of corporations who do pollute can sue the EPA and actually win? What? We didn't need the TPP for that, Tim. We just needed Fat Tony and Sammy Bad Breath and Clarence Slappy Coke Can and Kennedy Guy and, you know, Dead-Eyed John Roberts. Los Angeles, Tim continues. Los Angeles' air quality is clean because of tight regulation on polluters. Our city may end up being gray once again. No, you won't, because you're not going to run out there and start building coal-fired power plants. Mm-mm. Our city may end up being gray once again. Well, so much for carbon taxing our way out of smog, and carbon tax may be illegal, too, under the TPP. Wait and see. Wait and see. This one hurts, though. This one hurts. Because, see, a person doesn't necessarily walk around with a sign around their neck saying, I'm going to die prematurely because of filthy air. Or, eventually, I'm going to have a heart attack because of fine particulates that the Supreme Court wants in the air. And if you go through... And if you go through the obituaries in your local newspaper, there's not going to be a mention of the fact that maybe somebody died a day, a week, a month, a year, a decade, a quarter century too early. I can never read one of these cases, one of these stories, without thinking about young Elbert Javonte Wood. Woods, 16-year-old son of Icky Woods, the former running back for the Cincinnati Bengals, who after his playing days were over, liked Cincinnati well enough, and Cincinnati liked him, that he decided to stay and raise a family there in what turns out to be some of the foulest, most noxious, poisonous air in the country. Like his daddy, Albert was going to be a football player. And unfortunately, though, after being raised in Cincinnati, he had a big case of asthma. And after football practice one August afternoon, he collapsed and he never regained consciousness. And he died. Just, you know, a pluribus unum, one out of many. Out of many, one. And the doctors at the hospital who treated him noted that the greater Cincinnati area was at that time experiencing particularly high levels of particulate air pollution. Yeah, the coal industry and this is what Uncle Nino is talking about when he talks about taking into account your cost there. Because see, you know, okay, whatever. Maybe it's 2 dozen. Maybe it's 100. Who gives a damn? You know, one little black kid who wanted to play football like his daddy done. Screw him! The earth don't need him. What this country needs is more profits. And that's where Uncle Nino comes down. And if that doesn't gag your moral gut, well, I know it does in the Horn Family Commune congregation. I know it does. But this country's full of people that it doesn't. Right now, somewhere, somebody is looking on their app on their phone, or maybe they're Luddites and they're scanning the Wall Street Journal or Barron's or something, trying to find out what happened to their coal-fired power plant power company stocks today. Right now, there are mutual fund managers who are trying to find out what happened to Appalachian Power or the Southern Company today, whose stock in trade is poison that flows out of the top of coal-fired power plant stacks. Little note coming from Ron up in Canada. My mom and two half-sisters live in that noxious air in the Miami Valley. That's your Miami, Ohio Valley. A surgeon there told me that 50% of the population who's lived in the area for more than 10 years has nodules and damage from the pollutants in the air. 75-mile radius from Cincinnati has a noticeably higher mortality rate than the overall average in the United States. And of course, this is at the base of what we're talking about when we talk about statistical excess deaths. Nobody gets a little skull and crossbones with fumes rising off of it at the corner of their obituary. But they're there. They're there all over this country. By the thousands. And Fat Tony don't give a damn. Well, I mean, he does give a damn. He gives a damn about the money. And by the way, most likely over in, my Senator Joe Manchin's office, or my Senator. Ha! Over in Senator Joe Manchin's office and over in Shelley Arch in a bad wig, Moore Capito's office, they're doing the happy dance. Because their power company donors get to keep poisoning people without even trying to mitigate it. The whole thing, from the ACA to the marriage equality to this, reminds me of the title of one of my favorite Robert Frost poems. Happiness makes up in height for what it lacks in length. Now, let's be clear. They did not invalidate the EPA rules today. What they did, what Uncle Nino did, was set up a scheme whereby the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals can more easily invalidate the rule. Because the case was remanded to the remand means send back. The case was remanded to the D.C. Circuit. And the D.C. Circuit has to rehear it and reconsider the evidence in light of the scheme that Uncle Nino set forward. It's possible, were I a betting man with anything to bet, I would not bet it. It's possible that maybe the D.C. Circuit will say, okay, and send it back to the EPA, and the EPA has a do-over, and that'll take 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 more years. And in those 10 years, maybe 500,000 people will die who didn't have to. And it will be entirely the fault of Fat Tony, Dead-Eyed John Roberts, Sammy Bad Breath, Clarence Coke Can, and that Kennedy guy. They will personally have upon their heads the blood of thousands of innocents. And hey, not just hillbillies, but, you know, Michiganders. Hey, Michiganders, because I know we got some in the Horn Family Commune congregation. How's about maybe a letter to the editor thanking your attorney general for bringing this damned lawsuit so that more people in your state can die? And it'll happen to them in Wisconsin. It'll happen to them in Illinois. It'll happen to them in Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi. It'll happen wherever a coal-fired power plant is. And they'll stand over the casket. And they'll say, how lifelike. And nobody will say, sure seems too soon. Nah, they'll say that, and they'll say, that's too young. And there won't be anybody standing there in the funeral home or the church saying, yeah, it is too young, and it was too soon, and you have Fat Tony Uncle Nino to thank for it. You have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States to thank for it. You have Sammy Alito to thank for it. You have Clarence Thomas to thank for it. You have Kennedy to thank for it. Well, I guess it was just his time. Her time. Kind of hard to say that about a 5-year-old who dies of asthma, though, isn't it? You know, every child that dies of asthma in this country, from now on, should send a death announcement to Tony Scalia and Roberts and Alito and Thomas and Kennedy. The rats plus K. Because they had as much a hand in it. Now see, this is, in terms of what they did today, this is what you would call your black-robed violence. You know that old saying about they can steal more with a pen and paper than a gangster can with a gun? Yeah, they can kill more with a pen and paper than a gangster can with a gun, too. And they pulled the trigger today on thousands. Suffice it to say, makes me sick. Now, to be fair, by the way, one other little thing. This was a regulation about toxic heavy metals. This has nothing to do with CO2. Let's be clear. This is about toxic heavy metals. And Justice Elena Kagan wrote the dissent. And Justice Kagan was not happy . She pointed out that the EPA's decision to regulate mercury was based on the fact that power plant emissions pose a serious health problem and that solutions to the problem are available and the problem will remain unless action is taken. Where in there is there an appropriate room to worry about what it might cost some billionaire CEO? Hint, there ain't. Until those five made room. You know, we must think about
the billionaires. Come now, they're Americans too. They've got more right to breathe than your five-year-old does.
Justice Kagan laid into them. The agency, when making its appropriate and necessary finding, did not decline to consider costs as part of the regulatory process. Rather, it declined to consider cost at a single stage of that process, knowing that they would come in later on. The first thing the EPA considered, and you know what? From a guy who's not terribly impressed with the EPA's tender mercies here in Appalachia, I got to give them credit. The first thing they considered was human health. In eviscerating Uncle Nino's argument that cost must always be considered first, she said that is a peculiarly blinkered way for a court to assess the lawfulness of an agency's rulemaking. I agree with the majority. Let there be no doubt about this. That EPA's power plant regulation would be unreasonable if the agency gave cost no thought at all. But that is just not what happened here. In other words, she is quietly and most politely calling Uncle Nino a big old liar. Over more than a decade, EPA took costs into account at multiple stages and through multiple means as it set emissions limits for power plants. And when making its initial appropriate and necessary finding, EPA knew it would do exactly that, knew it would thoroughly consider the cost-effectiveness of emission standards later on. That context matters. Oh, by the way, just a quick question. I don't know if this is a public health question or an engineering question. Maybe it's both. How many people have been killed by particulate emissions from wind turbines? How many people have been killed by particulate emissions from solar panels? If you said none, you're right. Hey, wait a minute. That's why we have this. There's a future out there, and the rats don't want any part of it and don't want us to be part of it. No, it is more American for children to breathe poisonous particles of heavy metals. And again, the heavy metals part. There's no such thing as a good heavy metal in your system. They can be useful. They can be very useful. But they have to be most carefully handled and most carefully processed. But it's not just that these fine particulates make it harder to breathe. It's that they get into your system in tiny, tiny amounts. And then they go all over your body. And that's how it is that when somebody has a nagging cough that shouldn't be there and goes to the doctor, and, you know, they're not a smoker, you know. And they're in church every Sunday. And the doc says, that cough? Oh, you've got lung cancer. Oh, yeah, it's checkout time. And they go, but I don't smoke. No, you don't. You don't do a lot of things, but what you do is breathe the poisonous air that we have for the sake of billionaire CEOs of power companies. You goddamn liberal, you just want people to freeze to death in the dark, don't you? See, that's what comes of breathing all that mercury. You wind up being a friend of coal and, you know, having the cerebral processes of, you know, a wad of chewing gum on a hot sidewalk. Mm-hmm. That's not all we got this evening. No, we'll be talking about a lot more as the evening progresses. Now, a little kindly reminder, if you want to get involved in the conversation this evening, let's do that before 15 minutes past the third hour of the program. Don't wait till then to call. Oh, it just hit me. Nope. This should just be titled, this opinion from Uncle Nino, or maybe subtitled with a little set of parentheses. How many times I got to keep telling you rubes that corporations are people, huh? Note from Jack in Shreveport, a couple of notes. Seems like the EPA situation is something like an ex post facto law. The Supreme Court, in effect, changed how a law is interpreted and then lets the system try again. I get that cases are remanded all the time, but in this specific case, it seems more real. That is, closer to an ex post facto analogy. What's up with my thinking on this? It's not an ex post facto thing. Because an ex post facto law would be to say if the EPA was to try to fine a coal-fired power plant for something that they emitted 50 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago based on a regulation that they just promulgated, that would smell ex post facto. This doesn't. Jack also says, if cost must always be considered first, it seems that the economic system is considered before the social contract, i.e. the Constitution doesn't define an economic system, but does mention our general welfare. Well, you know all that applesauce and putting his head in a bag and stuff like that Uncle Nino was talking about? He just had somebody come around to the Constitution's house there and, you know, take it out to the woods for a ride, you know. It is 9 minutes past the hour. I've a little bit over filibustered, but that's okay. Big thanks going out to our buddy Reinhard, and to Tim. Tim with a note says, "Hey, hornies and Maloyalists, give to the horn so we can make sure the truth can be told." Oh, and Bob, at the UU General Assembly last week, we supported ending mountaintop removal, and this week I'll complete communication with the UUs on the left coast. Awesome. Y'all passed a resolution? No kidding? We need something official back here in Appalachistan so that we can share it, because that's awesome. So, I got good news. Tim and Reinhard finished off the $300 worth of the challenge this evening. That means that Thomas's challenge is on the table. The next $200 that come in get doubled. And that will mean that if we stay on track, we will finish up 2 weeks of fundraising in 1 week. On Friday, if everything continues this way. We have $1,000 worth of matching challenges. All that's required is $1,000. The usual week's fundraising from members of the Horn Family Commune congregation. Can we do it? I hope so. It would be awesome if we could complete Thomas's challenge this evening, and we've got an hour and 50 minutes in which to accomplish it. By the way, Jeremy in Vermont has renamed my Uncle Nino impression. That's Uncle Dice Nino. Or Uncle Dice Leah. I like that. Thank you, Jeremy. Okay, break time. If you want to get in on the conversation, there are two phone numbers. Remember, one of them, 304-574-8178, is there for you, as is the stress line, named in memory of Mr. Stress, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N. Either one's fine, and if you want to reach out maybe from somewhere elsewhere on the planet, use Skype. And that contact is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. It all works famously and fabulously and wonderfully and is just waiting for you. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. A desperate man.
man. Send lawyers, guns, and money. The shit has hit the fan. Guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money.
Past the hour, and that, you know, anytime you're talking about a judicial screwing, that song just comes in handy. The late, great Warren Zevon, Lawyers, Guns, and Money. Yeah, there's more than a few Warren Zevon fans in the Horn Family Commune congregation. Ron pointing out he's also particularly fond of Excitable Boy and Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner, two of my favorites, too. By the way, Randy says, to be technically accurate, when you make the steel in China to manufacture the wind turbines, you do generate particulates, but it's a one-time cost. That's absolutely true. And yet, well, if we were manufacturing the steel in the United States, and if we had a responsible Supreme Court that wouldn't try to destroy regulatory schemes on the on the backs of sick people, and in furtherance of the relentless desire for holy profit on the part of the 1%, we could probably minimize that almost down to nil. They ain't doing that in China. Tim following up a little bit on the UU statement on mountaintop removal. He says the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly passed ending mountaintop removal back in 2006, but we continued support when a Native American pastor talked about how his tribe is dying from the poisoning. The 2006 action of immediate witness reads, whereas the Appalachian Mountain Range is an irreplaceable environmental treasure in the heart of the United States, whereas mountaintop removal coal mining is devastating the environment, economies, people, and culture in Appalachia, whereas the Environmental Protection Agency estimates that at least 700 miles of healthy streams have been buried by mountaintop removal coal mining, it's nearly doubled since then, whereas the exploitation of Appalachia unjustly enriches other regions in the United States by providing cheap coal and thus electricity at the expense of Appalachia, whereas, but you know, that one probably needs to be revisited, because less than 4% of all the mountaintop removal coal goes to power generation. A lot of it goes to steel making in China, see Randy above, below, sideways, and it also goes to power generation in places like the Netherlands, steel making in Russia, power generation in India, that sort of thing. Whereas the availability of cheap coal thwarts energy conservation efforts because consumers, if required to pay the full and true cost of energy, would likely change their consumption habits, and whereas passage of this really needs to be revisited. This references H.R. 2719, the Clean Water Protection Act. and the Clean Water Protection Act, and I've advocated on its behalf, but it really is, what was that phrase Harry Reid used? Weak tea. Because the coal industry has already figured out how to get around the Clean Water Protection Act, should it ever be passed, and of course, it wasn't, never will be. It should reduce the use of mountaintop removal coal mining, because coal companies would no longer be permitted to dump waste into nearby streams and valleys. No, now they do what's called backstacking. They just move the so-called overburden around on the site until they get whatever they're after, and then they move it somewhere else. Therefore, be it resolved that in order to protect the Appalachian environment and its people and to promote environmentally aware energy consumption patterns, the delegates of the 2006 General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association call upon our member congregations, our affiliate organizations, and individual Unitarian Universalists to petition their congressional representatives for passage of, that needs to read H.R. 912, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. Petition relevant federal and state agencies such as the Office of Surface Mining, the Army Corps of Engineers, and the individual state permitting agencies to suspend or refuse to issue permits for mountaintop removal coal mines. That could probably be done away with in its entirety. The only thing, working through regulatory schemes will never end mountaintop removal, because the regulatory schemes were put in place specifically to empower mountaintop removal. There. This was kind of forward-thinking. Well, of course, it's Unitarians. Petitioned relevant agencies to restrict Appalachian mountaintop removal coal mining to daylight hours. But this is really cool. Petitioned relevant national and state departments of health and human services to engage in dialogue regarding the effects of environmental degradation on the health of affected communities. Mm-hmm. Petitioned relevant agencies to levy and collect fines for mining and environmental violations. They probably should have... been told the story about what happened here in West Virginia a few years back, when millions of dollars of fines were levied against Massey, and the state of West Virginia allowed Massey to pay the fine in rocks. So it should probably read something like, petition relevant agencies to levy and collect fines in real money for mining and environmental violations. Strengthen legislation and funding for restoration of lands affected by mountaintop removal coal mining, and raise awareness that the impact of the choice of coal mining techniques on local communities is a national and not a regional issue. That's pretty solid all the way around. Very solid indeed, and thank you for sharing that with me, Tim. And with all of us, thank you for sharing it with us. Just a sec here. All right, then. Like I said, that wasn't all there was. No, there was another case that came down. I referenced it briefly during the Uncle Nino's story time. The death penalty case. We have members of the Supreme Court, the rats, the usual suspects. Who really do think that if it's cruel but not unusual, or if it's unusual but not cruel, cool, kill them. Once again, Uncle Nino used the it deters crime argument, even though there is not a statistician or social scientist or any sort of scientist worth his or her salt who will say that it does, because, it doesn't. But, Uncle Nino's just a liar anyway, and he can put it all in print, and he's got a black robe on, and you don't want to know what's going on under there. I got a feeling that when they were announcing the the death penalty case, he had one hand under his robe at least. But Justices Breyer and the justice we refer to as the notorious RBG, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, long may she live, both said in dissent that it's highly likely that the death penalty is unconstitutional. And here's how you reach that. Again, it's the difference between how Uncle Nino looks at the Constitution and how intelligent people look at the Constitution. Uncle Nino would judge capital punishment by the standards of 1787, when there was still capital punishment. And in fact, it would only be another 5 years when there would be a serious outbreak of capital punishment over in France. Lots of capital punishment. But here's what's interesting. The French Revolution is in part notorious. Famous doesn't seem to be the right word. The French Revolution, one of the enduring images from it is that of the guillotine, named, of course, for its inventor, Dr. Guillotine. Dr. Guillotine actually invented his decapitation machine, for that is indeed what it is, as an attempt to be less cruel. Because by 1793, there was plenty of evidence of just how wrong an execution could go. I mean, we hear about, say, the decapitation of Anne Boleyn, or, you know, a couple of other of Henry's wives. There were all kinds of decapitations and drawings and quarterings and, yeah, and heads spitted on pikes at Tower Bridge. Decapitations in Spain as a result of the Civil War, the uprising there, the conflict between the Muslims and the Christians, the Catholic Church came up with the idea of burning people alive because it didn't technically shed any blood, and that made the priests feel better. But a lot of power structures spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to not look quite so awful in removing people from this life. Isn't it interesting that the church came up with burning people alive instead of just throwing them in a hole and letting them starve to death? No, because see, there's that whole part there about how Yeshua is telling them they need to feed the sick and the poor and the hungry and everything, and yeah, that won't work. And if you're a European monarch and you really just got to get rid of somebody, waiting for him to starve to death is not gonna satisfy that bloodlust. So woof with their heads. And consequently, Dr. Guillotine comes up with a machine whose engineering and design exists for the purpose of making sure that that the death was accomplished somewhat cleanly. You know, basket in front, straw, lots of straw all around, you know, soak up the blood. Right. Ruining somebody's dinner. Sorry. Because even then, they deemed it, they understood that the death penalty is inherently cruel. This is apparently lost on the Supreme Court, well, on the rats plus Kennedy portion of the Supreme Court. And so, consequently, even Dr. Guillotine's attempt was designed to make it as quick as possible. And it worked well enough that France only gave up the guillotine in the 20th century. Meanwhile, word out of Saudi Arabia has it that they are having a hard time finding skilled swordsmen to perform those more or less ad hoc decapitations that are carried out at any given time in the streets of our partners in peace, Saudi Arabia. You know, the good headloppers. Now, here's a real interesting and, oh, shall we say, gruesomely fun part of Sammy Bad Breath's opinion today. Remembering, of course, that Sammy Bad Breath is famous for approving of the strip search of a child, and B, approving judicially of the idea, the concept of shooting a teenage fleeing black man in the back of the head, even though he was unarmed and posed no threat to police. That's our Sammy! He had a beef with the Oklahoma death row inmates who filed this case after Oklahoma tortured a man to death last year. He had a beef with them because he said that, well, okay, so they don't like how they're going to get executed. But they didn't give us a better method. No, really. A sitting member of the Supreme Court of the United States imposed a burden upon the petitioners who were asking not to be gruesomely murdered in the name of the state. He imposed a burden on them of telling the state how to do it better, even though there is not a single chemist, biochemist, biologist, physicist, physician, surgeon, pathologist, nothing, bupkis, among the petitioners petitioning not to be gruesomely murdered by the state. I guess he wanted to say, we'd be happy to be taken out and shot. Guillotine would be all right. God, it reminds me of the story of the Californian, the New Yorker, and the hillbilly mountaintop removal worker, who were all sentenced to be executed by the guillotine. And as each one of them stepped up off the tumbril and onto the platform, the executioner said, now here's how it works. If you're innocent, your head will not be removed from your body. The New Yorker said, fine by me. I'm innocent. Well, let's find out. So they laid him over. They put the block in the thing, and then it stops just short of cutting the man's head off. And they let him up. Obviously, you're innocent. Go your way. Put the Californian and explain it to him. Cool. All medicine. And with the block and the frame and and it stops just short. They let him up, and they get the mountaintop removal worker in there, and they explain it to him. Any last words? He goes, "Yeah, you got a knot in your rope." Now, just wrapping this up, that was a joke. Bear in mind that even after the horrors of the terror, the French Revolution, yeah, the French continued to use the guillotine. But they eventually reached the conclusion that it was inhumane, that capital punishment is just wrong, which it is, and that no civilized country should be caught doing it. Both before and after the French decision, other European states came to the same notion. Same conclusion. And so while Uncle Nino is trapped in the late 18th century, trying to judge the 21st century planet by late 18th century standards, well, they knew about capital punishment. They said it couldn't be done if it was cruel or unusual. If we understand the Constitution to be not governing people in 1787, but in fact governing people in 2015, then you look around the world at who does capital punishment and who doesn't. And it becomes pretty readily apparent that, well, Iran does capital punishment. Our partners in peace, the Saudis, do capital punishment. The Chinese do capital punishment. I'm sure there are does Singapore do capital punishment? I mean, they'll beat the shit out of you for chewing a piece of gum. They probably do, don't they? Probably nations in Africa and South America. Some may not. But if life will simply take its natural course with Uncle Nino and Coke Can Slappy, then maybe, just maybe, we may eventually get rid of capital punishment, which will then occasion behavior like that of the governor of Nebraska, who has sworn, even though his legislature overrode his veto, Nebraska eliminated capital punishment. And the governor vetoed it, and the Nebraska legislature said, nah, screw you, and overrode his veto. And now the governor of Nebraska has sworn to kill all the death row inmates before the law takes effect. I don't know if he's had any luck. But we may get to the point where, well, what will happen is if we do get to the point where we declare capital punishment unconstitutional, there will be an outraged cry from, of course, conservatives. And you'll have stuff going on like is going on in Texas and Alabama right now. See the segue there? Pretty impressive, huh? Now, after the Obergefell decision, the outfit in Alabama, headed by Judge Roy Moore, put a statement on their Facebook page. The Foundation for Moral Law, a Montgomery-based legal foundation dedicated to the defense of the Constitution and the rights of religious persons, says the battle for traditional marriage will continue despite the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court to strike down laws prohibiting same-sex marriage. Today, the Supreme Court voted 5-4 to reverse a ruling by the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals that had upheld the marriage laws of Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee, holding that the right to marry a person of the same sex is guaranteed by the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. But the Foundation for Moral Law is blowing the whistle on the illegitimacy of today's decision. Probably shouldn't have used the participle blowing in a press release about gay marriage. Not only does the Supreme Court have no legal authority to redefine marriage, well, they kind of do insofar as it's a governmental institution and not a religious one, but also at least two members of the court's majority opinion were under a legal duty to recuse and refrain from voting. You know, just like Uncle Nino was under a legal duty to recuse himself from hearing Dick Cheney's cases, but that didn't slow him down, none did it. No! Their failure to recuse calls into question the validity of this decision. Not done.
This means we've got more work to do, but we are determined to do it, said Foundation President Kayla Moore. The Foundation is involved with a same-sex marriage case in the Middle District of Alabama, and that case will continue. There are issues in this case that the Supreme Court's decision didn't resolve.
No, the Supreme Court did not expressly say that Kayla Moore is dead from the neck up, but I think it's implied, don't you? So, there's that. Well, as soon as the Obergefell decision was released, published, the Morans started lining up. Let's see. How about... Yeah, this looks promising. How about Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future King of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz? He didn't waste any time, presidential candidate that he is. And understand, out of the entire clown train that is the Republican presidential field. Presidential. I don't think that word means what they think it means. Not one single solitary candidate has had the common decency to acknowledge that gay people are fully vested with constitutional rights just like any other citizen of this country. He went on the Today Show this morning. Well, you gotta hear it to believe it. It defies description. Simply amazing. Yes, I'm waiting for the ad to end. I had it queued up, but apparently that doesn't matter. We've got to watch Monica Seles boil water and make tea. I don't understand. Something about binges. Please, God, when will it end? What is this, a freaking infomercial? Now she's doing Zen flower arranging. Ah, bingeeatingdisorder.com. Okay.
Pride parades took on new meaning on Sunday as people poured into the city streets to celebrate the Supreme Court's ruling legalizing same-sex marriage nationwide. Over the weekend, comments on that decision from Republican presidential candidates ranged from calls to respect the decision to support for an amendment that would reverse the ruling. Texas Senator Ted Cruz called it illegitimate and lawless. He would like a constitutional amendment that would abolish the lifetime appointment of Supreme Court justices and allow voters to have a chance to remove them from the bench. Cruz has got a new book out. It's called A Time for Truth, Reigniting the Promise of America. And he joins us now. Senator Cruz, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Savannah. Great to be with you.
Can't think of a better time to have you as a guest with these really consequential rulings coming down last week. You were quoted as saying these two decisions represented some of the darkest 24 hours in American history. And I have to say, that took me back. I can think of some pretty dark days in American history, 9/11, Civil War, Dred Scott. Is it right up there with you for that?
Yeah. Oh, look, what happened last week is twice, back-to-back, the U.S. Supreme Court, a majority of the justices, violated their judicial oath. On Thursday of last week, the court rewrote Obamacare, rewrote the statute, ignored the language of the statute, and as a result, forced millions of people into this failed law. Millions of Americans are hurting. They've lost their jobs, have lost their health care because of Obamacare. And then the next day, the Supreme Court rewrote the Constitution and threw out the marriage laws of all 50 states. Now, listen, I've spent my life fighting to defend the Constitution, and there is a constitutional means. If someone wants to change the marriage laws in a state, the way the Constitution allows you to do so is to convince your fellow citizens to do so through the democratic process. What we saw instead is five unelected lawyers saying the views of 320 million Americans don't matter because they're going to enforce their own policy position.
Let me ask you about that, because one thing you also said was that you would support a Texas state clerk who refused to issue a license to a gay couple on religious grounds. Let me ask you this. If a state clerk refused to issue a marriage license to an interracial couple, would you agree with that, too?
Well, there's no religious backing for that. And one of the things...
But you know that in the Loving Virginia versus Virginia case, which is that struck down the bans on interracial marriage, they used religious arguments to justify that.
There's no religious backing for that. And I have spent decades fighting against bigotry and racial oppression. I'm the son of a Jew. Bigotry is fundamentally wrong. And one of the things I talk about in the book, A Time for Truth, is fighting to defend religious liberty. For me, religious liberty isn't some newfound campaign theme. I've spent two decades, when I was the Solicitor General of Texas, the chief lawyer for the state in front of the United States Supreme Court, over and over again we fought and defended religious liberty and won. We defended the Ten Commandments and won. We defended the Pledge of Allegiance and won. One of the things I was really honored to do, I represented over 3 million veterans defending the Mojave Desert Veterans Memorial and won. And religious liberty is right at the foundation of our country.
Well, let me go back to this case that Loving versus Virginia, this is a precedent you're well aware of. This struck down a state ban on interracial marriage. This is something that many, many people see parallels with the same case that just decided gay marriage. You say it should be left to states. Would you have taken that same position on the case of interracial marriage, that that's not a constitutional right and the states should have been free to ban interracial marriage if they wanted to?
Of course not. And we fought a bloody civil war.
What's the difference in those two cases?
It is exactly what I said, that we fought a bloody civil war over the original sin of our country that was slavery. Slavery was grotesque and immoral, and some 600,000 Americans lost their lives, spilled their blood on American soil to expunge it, and we passed three amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution, that are to ensure that everyone has equal rights regardless of race.
Except
that was honoring the promise of the Constitution. It was the right thing to do. You know, one of the things that in my book, A Time for Truth, I talk about is my time clerking at the U.S. Supreme Court, trying to give people a window to what happens behind the scenes. It's the same thing I try to do in the Senate, where we're giving people an understanding not just of what is said on the news, but what's actually happening behind closed doors, the role of money, and sadly, the corruption of both Republicans and Democrats who join together in what I call the Washington cartel.
You talk about corruption, money, and politics, and yet you're suggesting this constitutional amendment that would subject Supreme Court justices to retention elections, which sounds like injecting politics into the one branch of government the framers were very clear about they did not want to have to be subject to the political winds. How do you explain that?
Well, let's be clear. The court has injected itself into politics. You've got, you know, Justice Scalia wrote two powerful dissents. I would encourage everyone to read Justice Scalia's dissents, where he says these decisions are a fundamental threat to democracy, and he says five...
Oh, shut up, Ted. How many times can he possibly pimp that miserable tome? I mean, he was like the guy from Idiocracy, brought to you by Carl's Jr. I love how he can't distinct. Well, that was religious. There was no religious. We can't. I mean, Loving versus Virginia. I mean, yeah, Negroes. Oh, we fought. And oh God, I love it. You can always spot the closet Confederates because they'll say 600,000 Americans died. No, dipshit. 600,000 Americans did not die. 300,000 Americans died. And, or maybe more. And whatever was left over, the people who died wearing gray and butternut and marching under that filthy rag, yeah, they declared they weren't Americans anymore. So they don't get to be called Americans. 300,000 Americans died. Some couple of 100,000 or more, because they actually did, I think, kill more of us than we did of them, and there's a monument to that effect on the state capitol grounds in Texas, I think. But those were traitors. Those were treason committers. That's why they had to reaffirm their loyalty to the United States. Every last single soldier. Robert E. Lee. A lot of them had to reaffirm and re-swear allegiance to the United States. But see, Ted Cruz, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, already anointed future King of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, he's a liar. As we like to say here in the Hills and Hollers, the truth ain't in him. And frankly, this idea that it's religious, a religious violation, he knows it's bullshit. You know it's bullshit. I know it's bullshit. And the only people who don't know it's bullshit are the rubes. The useful idiots. The cannon fodder in the culture war that the right wing uses at will. Whenever they want to talk about women having autonomy over the workings of their own bodies, and now whenever they want to talk about a couple of guys or a couple of women wanting to get hitched and having the same rights and duties and responsibilities and obligations as any other married couple under the Constitution of the United States, which does not enshrine any religion. When you come right down to it, the Obergefell decision was a no-brainer. The only people who had a problem with it are the people who deliberately wanted to have a problem with it because homosexuality and sexy time. I mean, my God, the gay community has given more dignity to the idea of marriage than the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, ignoring the words of Christ about divorce fundamentalists have ever done. By the way, let's see, one, day four, unsmited America. Where's the volcano? Or as Marvin Martian would put it, where's the kaboom? Where's the earth-shattering kaboom? Someone has stolen the Elodian Q-32 exploding space modulator gay marriage destroyer. Jesus. Well, that's I probably should have issued a hockey puck warning. But Jack in Shreveport knows, you know, you can't use the puck if you need the bucket to puke in. Right-wingers use hyperbole as a rule, no matter how absurd they sound. SMH. Yeah. Meanwhile, down in Alabama, Stan, nobody really knows what to do now. Now, the easy thing to have done would have been to say, the Supreme Court has ruled, there you go. But not Alabama. They had to send, John Kennedy had to send in federal troops in June of 1963. Had to send in the Federalized National Guard because George C. Wallace was standing in the damn courthouse door, or schoolhouse door at the University of Alabama. Hollering about segregation yesterday, segregation today, and segregation forever until the guys with the guns showed up. Well, Roy Moore, who runs the Alabama Supreme Court, issued a ruling, an order. They ordered probate judges not to issue same-sex marriage licenses for 25 days. They did that because in the case of any decision by the Supreme Court, there's a 25-day window in which to file a petition for rehearing. Yeah, it ain't going to work. But they're buying time. On the other hand, however, the Association of County Commissions of Alabama have issued a directive to probate judges, and probate judges are the ones who issue marriage licenses, that they should follow the Supreme Court's ruling beginning 10 a.m. today. Now, if the probate judge doesn't, the probate judge can be hauled not in front of Roy Moore, who will say, "Well done, thy good and faithful servant," but in front of a federal United States District Court judge who might very well say, my boss has said you gotta. You're in contempt. Poor old Jefferson County Probate Judge Sherry Friday said, it's very unclear. So, some counties aren't, and some counties are issuing them anyway, and, well, you know, Judge Roy Moore and whose army, right? And then there's Texas. Sweet Jesus, there's always Texas. Where the Attorney General of that state has said, we will forever defend the religious rights of clerks who don't want to issue those disgusting homosexual marriage licenses. Really? Damned interesting day. Now, ordinarily we would save something like this for Wednesday, but it really can't wait because it's part of a larger story. At the same time that the Ku Klux Klan has announced that Dylan Roof, or Roofy, as I like to refer to him, the Klan says that he was heading in the right direction, you know, by murdering 9 people. Well, an upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing follower of Christ to wit, and we've heard from this cat before. Pastor Stephen Anderson of Faithful Word Baptist Church, who hates gay people with a perfect hatred, and says, "I count them mine enemies," because he talks like that. And who wants all homosexuals, all lesbians, all bisexuals, all trans people, he wants them all executed. God, it just makes me feel dirty even saying that. And then, of course, there was no lightning bolt out of the sky when he said, "I want Christians to have the guts to stand up to our culture that now accepts homos. Where's the call to repentance? Where's the hope? Where's the love and the grace? It isn't there." Well, it's not there with him. There's plenty of hope and love and grace out there in churches that are accepting of gay people, because the Bible really doesn't have much to say about being gay if you actually understand the words from whence the mistranslations come. Then there's William Tapley, who calls himself the third eagle of the apocalypse. Really? That's modest. Said that the Supreme Court has legalized the crime of sodomy and will bring about the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. No. The Soviet Union, today's Russia, opposes gay marriage. God is going to make it clear that he is destroying a country that legalized gay marriage by a country that opposes gay marriage. This is very significant. Oh, Lord. And, of course, they want, these monsters do, they want people stoned to death. Because, you know, they get off on death and mayhem and maimings and killings. And they got, and for all I know, they were masturbating furiously when the news came from the Pride event in Seattle from this past Sunday. According to KOMO, Stephen Spriggs and Patrick Detling were celebrating the Obergefell decision when 3 men and 2 women approached them. Stephen Spriggs says, and the guy comes up behind him, talking about Patrick Detling. And the guy comes up behind him, raises his hand above his head, and then just smacks his hand. I said, "Why'd you do that?" And he was like, "I was just high-fiving you." And I said, "That wasn't a high-five," and that's when things escalated. One of the attackers yelled a homophobic slur, we can all imagine what it was, as they punched Detling in the face. Then it turned into a brawl. 2 more people joined in, 2 more men, and punched Stephen Spriggs in the face and continued kicking him. After the Obergefell decision, I tweeted that I hoped my LGBT friends would be careful in the coming days. Because, as I noted, right-wing religion industry, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered fundamentalists were furious and violent and probably willing to kill. An individual who posts a bit on my Facebook page, who is always, for some reason or another, offering up some kind of defense or another for whatever right-wing misery is going down, said, "Do you really believe that, Bob? That's a very dangerous thing to be putting out there if you don't really believe it." I didn't believe it when I wrote it. I knew it was coming. I don't, and apparently he doesn't know me very well, I don't believe things. I don't do believing. There's either evidence to suggest that something is possible, likely, or real, factual, whatever, or there isn't. And, by the way, Pastor Scarborough walked back, chickened out on his threat to burn himself alive. Guess he was speaking metaphorically. Patrick Detling, after the attack, told KOMO, "It kind of made me regress back a little bit, regress backwards in my progress of feeling comfortable with who I am. I feel like I've been pushed back a step." On a day that he was celebrating freedom, Patrick Detling got a broken nose, various and sundry cuts, a whole bunch of bruises, got a tooth knocked out, and he and Stevens Briggs, who have been together for 8 years, spent the end of their celebration in the emergency room and will have thousands of dollars in medical bills. I don't just say things. The right wing in this country, whether it be over a flag of treason or people being able to legally manifest their love for each other and their commitment to spend their lives together, the right wing are extremely dangerous in this country. So I reiterate what I said a few days ago. Be careful. Especially if you're going to an event where there's going to, you know, where there's going to be a gathering of like-minded people. Be aware of your... And I'm not saying don't enjoy it, and I'm not saying be scared or be afraid. No. But be aware of your surroundings, and be particularly aware of how dangerous these evangelical fundamentalists really, really are. And I expand that now, especially in the state of Texas, to anyone involved in women's reproductive health care. Because there was another Supreme Court decision out today, and they've halted, the Supremes did, the Texas state government attempt to shut down every women's reproductive care facility in the state. And that's going to get them, being the evangelical fundamentalists, into a white hot, and I do mean white again, fury. They were never really out of it, but it's going to ramp it up. So if you are a woman going to, or you know a woman planning on going or trying to go to some sort of reproductive health care facility, just tell them to be careful. Be aware of your circumstances. Know where you are. You know, it occurs to me that in a way, this is a little bit like the talk. you know, the talk that black parents have, especially with their young male children, about the police. Only in this case it extends far beyond the police. We live in a country where the conservatives, the Republicans, God-fearing and Bible-believing that they are, the ninthers, the deathers, the birthers, the tenthers, the truthers, the birchers, the baggers, the booger-eaters, the libertarians, are fit to kill. And I'm not using that as some sort of metaphor. Be aware. Be alert. And maybe that way you or someone you care about won't become the next news story like this one out of Seattle. Oh, by the way, presidential candidate, and nobody has yet found who the American voter is who wants him to be president. Presidential candidate Piyush Jindal actually announced that his solution to gay marriage is to get rid of, I'm not kidding, the Supreme Court. Just poof! You know, because when Piyush is president, he'll just wave his mighty Piyush executive order signing pen and away to the cornfield with the Supreme Court, or at least the, well, you know, Kagan and Sotomayor and Ryan Ginsburg. Poof! Cornfield. Mm-hmm. Really? Louis Gohmert's furious. I suppose he considers the Obergefell decision on Friday to be a massive casting of aspersions on his asparagus. When justices of the highest court in the country believe they do not have to comply with essential laws governing courts themselves, then there is no overriding legitimate law of the land, which action standing alone is enough to substantiate tyranny. Unelected judges, that's what you have to say if you're a Republican. Unelected judges! Unelected judges! When in point of fact, the Supreme Court makes abundantly clear that they're not supposed to be elected. And had Louis Asparagus Gohmert ever spent even so much as a minute or two with the Federalist Papers, he might even understand why. We're getting pretty close to a quarter past the hour, which means we'll be expecting the call to come in from the producer for Ian Masters' program. We'll stay connected here, and you can hear the entire exchange. I'm looking forward to it. But just a little reminder, we made the $300 fundraising goal this evening. Thomas, our buddy Jug of Punch in the chat room, has subsequently offered up the Our Cup Runneth Over challenge. That means now that we've met the goal, anything we raise above $200, or anything we raise up to $200, I misspoke, up to $200, Thomas is going to match that. And hopefully, that extremely generous offer will be accepted 10 at a time, 20 at a time, it matters not. Your 10 becomes 20, your 20 becomes 40, your 50 becomes 100, your 100 becomes 2, your 2 becomes 4. Up to $200. You know, of course, that the PayPal interface is under the tab Contributed, headonradionetwork.com. And I trust you know the mailing address. If you don't, send me an email, and I will happily type it out for you. Just so that we don't have any weird transitions or anything, don't anybody run away. But I'm going to go dark until the call comes in. So I'll just sit here, if y'all don't mind. We'll have a brief interlude of silence. All right? This is listener-supported conversation radio with a $200 challenge on the table and the clock ticking. This is the horn. We'll be right back. Bob Kincaid.
Hi, Bob Kincaid. I'm calling for the interview with Ian Masters.
Yes, yes, indeed.
This is a landline, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And is it a cordless or a direct?
It's wired.
Okay. The volume is a bit low on our end. Is there any way to turn the volume up a little bit?
Is that any better?
Yeah, that actually sounds a lot better.
Great.
Okay, so, well, I was just wanting to call a few minutes in advance to check the line, and he's going to be taking a break in about 2 minutes and then introducing you.
Okay, that's
fine. Would you like to wait on the line?
Yes, we'll stand by.
Okay, one moment. I'll transfer you to the studio.
Thank you.
Sandy, it's recently on Bill
Murray.
Gutierrez, yeah, they were all roughed up in a cell, apparently.
They were treated pretty roughly. So did that whole thing backfire in the sense that they managed to preserve the island, but they lost all that money, this Puerto Rico did?
So the problem with Vieques was a little more complicated because the Navy was using uranium tips missiles, which were creating a large cancer cluster. So it was a public health disaster in Vieques. And again, that's one example of how the EPA did not enforce the same coastal protection law that would enforce in a state of the United States. You wouldn't see the Navy bombing an island off the coast of California or bombing the California beaches, especially under the coastal protection laws. But in the case of Puerto Rico, that was a normal practice. So yes, the revenues generated from renting the island for bombing cost a loss of about $400 million a year, plus Roosevelt Roads, which is the main base located in Puerto Rico, also was generating upwards of $500,000. So that the loss of that revenue, instead of just simply regulating the use of uranium tips in Vieques, the loss of the revenue affected or exacerbated the initial crisis in Puerto Rico. The better thing to have done may have been to simply stop bombing Vieques and clean up the island, you know, do some sort of intervention, perhaps following a better model than the one used in the Bikini Atolls in the Northern Mariana Islands. That's only addressing the issue of pollution. That was a major problem because Puerto Ricans lost a lot. The Puerto Rican government lost a lot of revenue. that could have been used to address some of these economic crises.
Well, just in closing, then, if the U.S. government, according to White House spokesman Josh Earnest today, said that they're not contemplating a federal bailout for Puerto Rico, however, federal officials are committed to working with the island, that's a sort of non-statement. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, there's enough money invested in Puerto Rico by corporations that my guess is that they'll push for some sort of bailout. The problem is that under the current private-public initiatives, post-austerity measures, any funding that goes to Puerto Rico is going to fuel this sort of crisis. Because Puerto Rico has to take new measures to control corruption, clientelism, and essentially wasteful spending. So my guess is that the Obama administration is not going to sort of endorse throwing more money at a corrupt sort of institutional system. But Puerto Rico may not have much of a choice. And U.S. corporations in Puerto Rico might put some pressure on Congress to have some sort of intervention, some sort of bailout.
Well, thank you very much for joining us here today, Charles Venator Santiago.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Good luck.
Good luck to you. And again, I've been speaking with Charles Venator Santiago, who's professor of Latino politics, public law, and political theory, who holds a joint appointment with the Department of Political Science and the Institute for Puerto Rican and Latino Studies at the University of Connecticut. He's currently completing a book-length manuscript on constitutional interpretation and the creation of spaces that belong to the U.S. but are not a part of the nation for constitutional purposes. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into the Supreme Court's ruling against the EPA that undermines the Obama administration's efforts to cut mercury and other toxic emissions from coal-burning power plants.
Hit you with the rock, hit you with the beat.
Break beats and rhyme with rebels to the grave.
Hit you with the rock, hit you with the beat.
Broadcasting live every late Saturday night from midnight to 2.
Yo, microphone check, 1, 2, what is this?
Tune in every late Saturday night going into Sunday from midnight to 2 a.m. right here on KPFK 90.7 FM and beyond.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Bob Kincaid, a co-founder of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign and the president of the Coal River Mountain Watch and the founder of the Head On Radio Network, on which he's a regular host. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bob Kincaid.
Thank you very kindly, Ian. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to be with you, and I believe that you're on my radio program and I'm on yours, right? Is that what's happening here?
We are simulcasting to the globe.
Oh, wonderful. So this is a bit of a backward step, clearly. But I believe that the Supreme Court ruling against the EPA is not a huge setback. I wouldn't say it's a minor setback, but it's not a huge setback. How do you see it?
It was hard not to get this news this morning, Ian, without feeling like the majority opinion in the Supreme Court absolutely made clear its disdain for the health and well-being of people who live downwind from these toxic plants. You're right in that it is not a complete loss. The court sent the case back to the D.C. Circuit for further consideration. But as far as the long-term health of the ruling is concerned, it's anybody's guess.
Well, you know, one of the things I find extraordinary about the Supreme Court, and particularly about the method in which Supreme Court justices are vetted and the Senate does its oversight in those hearings that we all remember. I don't know if we remember back with Roberts and Alito and all of the five, essentially, that voted against the EPA. Everybody asked some questions about abortion and other extraneous social issues, but nobody ever asked them the fundamental questions about whether or not they're corporatists. And all of these guys come out of corporate law. I mean, it seems like one of the most flagrant oversights in terms of the Senate's role of advice and consent. It's the one 900-pound gorilla in the living room that's never talked about.
Well, I think we kind of take it as read, don't we? You don't get to be on the Supreme Court of the United States without having had some degree of influence especially the right-wing nominees. Now, John Roberts is a little bit of a difference because John Roberts actually comes up through government and made his bones, got his chops, working against civil rights in the Reagan Justice Department, did he not?
That's true. I think he did a stint as a corporate lawyer, but no, you're right. I would have liked somebody to at least ask them the question, because I don't think it's put into the kind of framework that you know, in this country, you know, there are corporate lawyers and there are public interest lawyers, and there's certainly not a level playing field when it comes to that. And if you have a Supreme Court dominated by people whose natural bias is towards corporation, you end up with these kind of rulings.
Well, yes, you do, but understand that as far as the Senate is also comprised of millionaires, and consequently they feel like they're among their own, and nobody's ever... I can't imagine a situation in which someone who has spent a legal life working in legal aid or public defense or something like that would even get a nod from the president. And so consequently you wind up with these people who, I mean, the heart and soul of the ruling today was that Justice Scalia said that the EPA, whose mission is to look after the well-being of the environment, you know, environmental protection, he said that they somehow made a mistake because they didn't take the cost of the 1% CEOs of the power companies into account first. And I guess in his world, they should.
Right. He said the EPA strayed well beyond the bounds of reasonable interpretation in concluding that cost is not a factor relevant to the appropriateness of regulating power plants. Now, the truth of the matter is that an awful lot of these power plants, first of all, they've all regulated. They've all been told what the rules are, and they've had plenty of time to adapt their plants. And I believe of the 600, the majority now do have whatever these are. I guess there's some kind of scrubbers that are in the smokestacks that take out the mercury and other toxins.
Well, they do, but the technology is evolving. It's constantly evolving, and that's one of the little cruel ironies of the ruling today, is that the retrofitting of these power plants actually creates jobs, Ian. There are lots and lots of good union jobs, prevailing wage jobs, on these power plants for retrofitting them to comply with the Clean Air Act. And the court today, instead of the regulations being the job killers, the court today stepped into that role. And there's no small amount of irony in that.
Well, why did did 23 states join Peabody Coal and others? My understanding is where you are in Appalachia. That's what, West Virginia, Ohio, Kentucky. What are the, that's only like three. What are the other 20 states?
They have similarly philosophically aligned attorneys general. West Virginia probably would not have joined this suit if our previous attorney general was still in office. But West Virginia has an attorney general now who was, of course, backed by the Karl Rove outfit. He's a carpetbagger from New Jersey who used to be a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry, who wasn't even licensed to practice law in West Virginia when he was running for attorney general. But they're the same sort of Republican, hardcore right-wing conservatives, and it doesn't matter what the EPA does, they're going to file a lawsuit now. It's very much in line with the letter that Mitch McConnell sent out to the governors of the several states a few months ago, in which he told them to openly defy the EPA. The EPA has been made a boogeyman of sorts, a substitute, I suppose, for being able to go directly after Barack Obama. And so anything that the EPA does is immediately declared to be job-killing and immediately declared to be anathema to America, to freedom, to the coal industry, all of which is co-equal and to these people.
Right, and a part of this alleged war on the coal that Obama is supposed to be prosecuting. Again, I'm speaking with Bob Kincaid, who's the co-founder of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign and president of the Coal River Mountain Watch and founder of the Head On Radio Network, on which he's a regular host. And we're talking to him now on his radio network as well as this one. And Bob, the why is it that this mythical war on coal is being? I mean, I understand the propaganda value of on the part of the Republicans, but in the marketplace, my understanding is that the coal plants are literally dying on their own because of market forces, and that it's much more economical to switch to natural gas, and that's what's really going on. So, is this some kind of rearguard action that's being fought here?
These are the death howls of a dying beast. You're in L.A., so this is the woolly mammoth caught in the La Brea tar pits, trumpeting its brains out as it sinks into the tar. That's the coal industry. The coal is pretty much done in West Virginia, and the rest of the country is slowly figuring out that it is poisonous, and it cannot compete, as you note, with natural gas. So the coal industry, especially in Appalachia, though, is covering itself by howling like this so that when they do slip out in the dark and still of the night and leave us to rack and ruin, we'll think that it was that one in the White House who did it. And there are, unfortunately, for reasons of abundant biases and bigotries, a lot of people in central Appalachia who very badly want to believe that. Senator Shelley Moore Capito's press release today, of course, noted that the EPA had been killing jobs and had created millions of dollars in disastrous economic consequences, when in point of fact, it was the natural gas industry that did most of that, but she's in a bind because she takes money from them, too, and she can't be heard to be complaining about the fracking industry.
But meanwhile, the whole focus goes to the $9.6 billion in compliance costs that the power plants, coal-burning power plants, are complaining about. And everybody seems to be ignoring the EPA's argument that the health benefits from cutting emissions would be at least triple the compliance costs.
You're absolutely right. And chief among those people ignoring those numbers was, in fact, Antonin Scalia, because he offhandedly remarks in his opinion that any costs savings, maybe a few dollars, he says, or something like that, from health. The fact of the matter is, when it comes down to human life versus money, the Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia and Kennedy will always side with the money. And in point of fact, I was struck by the by what I thought was the genius, Ian, of announcing this decision today after the Supremes got the nation pretty much in a state of giddy elation over the ACA decision on Thursday and the Obergefell decision on Friday. And then this morning we wake up and went, oh, wait a minute, they just issued a ruling against everybody who breathes air.
Well, but and that's not inconsistent with what I was suggesting, Bob, and that is that these guys are corporatists. I mean, it's a totally consistent corporatist ruling in favor of gay marriage, because corporate America has moved on, and you saw how the reaction was in Indiana when the governor there tried to put through a homophobic law. It was business and corporate interests that pulled him over. Nikki Haley down in South Carolina, she's concerned about whether corporations are going to boycott South Carolina. And the ACA is not single payer. The Affordable Care Act is basically, in many ways, I wouldn't say it's a gift to Big Pharma and big insurance, but it's certainly they're in the mix,
It's massive corporate welfare for the insurance industry.
Right. Well, you put it better than that. Yeah.
And I thought the most interesting statement of coming out of the Confederate flag debate was Governor Robert Bentley of Alabama, who ordered the Confederate flag pulled down, and did so saying, "No flag is worth a job," because Google is getting ready to build a $600 million data center in Alabama. Oddly enough, it's going to be run on all renewable energy. And you're exactly right, Ian. It was a corporate decision. It was kind of Abe Vigoda saying, "Tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business."
So, what's your sense then, living there, in terms of, I don't mean a lot because it's a serious matter. I know when we spoke last time, and that hideous spill in the river with all those toxins, and the state government's response was just beyond disgraceful. And we were talking then about the casualties from not just from coal mining itself, but from the pollution caused by coal and the ecological devastation of mountaintop removal, etc. The citizens of your state pay a disproportionately high cost in terms of their health, do they not?
They absolutely do. And in point of fact, if I may note it, I'm heading along with some affected Appalachian residents to Washington, D.C. next week to try to raise awareness, especially on the Senate side of the Congress, of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign, the AHCE Act. It's H.R. 912. It's been reintroduced in the House of Representatives, and it provides the only realistic path toward affording some relief to this tormented region, because it takes into account those human health costs that you just mentioned based on peer-reviewed studies. You know, since we talked, we've had a groundbreaking, earth-shattering, I guess we could say, and certainly terrifying report come out of the Mary Babb Randolph Cancer Center in Morgantown, West Virginia, that shows that the dust from these mountaintop removal sites that we deal with here, remember, there are over 500 mountains that have been destroyed and over 1,000 miles of streams that have been buried, the dust that comes from the explosions on these sites, when human lung tissue is exposed to it, it begins to grow cancer cells. And so we're going to go to Washington, D.C. and try to get it introduced on the Senate side, because it badly needs to be introduced, because there needs to be greater awareness in Washington, D.C. that even the folks who like to talk about climate change and for whom it matters, people like Senator Boxer there in California, she needs to understand that if we talk about climate change but we don't talk about what's going on in the cradle of climate change, which is Appalachia, then we're not going to get very far.
Well, who do you have in terms of Senate sponsors? I mean, what about Manchin?
Well, we don't have any Senate sponsors yet. We're trying to get the bill introduced. Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore Capito will do everything in their power to stop it, and they have in the past. It's time, though, for senators from places outside Appalachia to behave like senators of old did. You know, the senators who stood up before 1860 and talked about slavery were not senators from Alabama. It was senators of conscience from Massachusetts and from Illinois and from Michigan and Pennsylvania. We need that spirit of caring about all of the American people again.
Well, you know, there's one person that really stepped up to the plate and should give these people some moral backbone, and that's Pope Francis.
The shooting in Charleston was a horror of a standalone basis, but it also overshadowed the release of Laudato Si, the encyclical by Pope Francis, which contains profound and moving language about the obligation upon the members of his flock to do something now about climate change. And I hope it's being taken seriously, but of course if you listen to the right wing, they're saying that the Pope just needs to talk about how Jesus loves the little children and shut up about the climate.
Well, I think they're on the wrong side of history. If I had a bet between the Pope and the Republicans, I'd bet with the Pope. And I thank you, Bob Kincaid, for joining us here today.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity to engage in conversation, Ian. I
very much enjoyed talking with you, Bob. And again, I've been speaking with Bob Kincaid, who's co-founder of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign and president of the Coal Ribbon Mountain Watch and founder of the Head On Radio Network, on which he's a regular host. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the Supreme Court's ruling in favor of a voter initiative in Arizona.
Tuesday morning on...
Oh, that was kind of cool. It's about 22 minutes before the hour. I kind of got to retool and step back, and I love doing that kind of thing. And I hope it, I'm sorry for the crackliness of it. I don't know. I think I had to gain my mic up too much. I think that was a problem. Well, let me see. Let's see if that makes a little bit of a difference. And we got a little less static. Yeah, thank you very kindly, Ron. Ron noting, great job. You covered a number of bases and didn't say anything that can get you sued. I did not say booger. Yeah. So, anybody want to finish out the evening in conversation? 304-574-8178, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676, if you'd like to. I got other stuff, but, I mean, my head's kind of... So if you do want to jump in, that's fine. Or, of course, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid, HORN, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N on Skype. This was, thank you, Jug of Punch. No bleach shower after that. No. No, I knew it would go well. Ian is a good interviewer and a pleasure to talk to on his program. What I said to him is true. Robert Morgantown sent me the link to the press statement from Shelley Moore Capito about this abominable decision.
Today's Supreme Court ruling confirms what we have long known in West Virginia. The Matz rule is unlawful and failed to consider the devastating impacts on our economy. Hey, Shelley, how devastating is it when you hold the hand of a six-year-old dying of cancer? Is that devastating, or is that something you just don't think about, huh, Shelley? Because it didn't happen to you, Shelley? It happens, though. And it happens thanks to the people who give you lots of money. While today's ruling is encouraging, many West Virginians have already suffered the effects of EPA's misguided Matz rule, with job layoffs, numerous mine closures, and electricity rate increases occurring throughout the state.
Well, three lies in one sentence. The job layoffs, the numerous mine closures, and the electricity rate increases. Well, let's see. The electricity rate increases were because the Appalachian Power Company and, of course, Mon Power, Monongahela Power, asked for them. And all they got to do is, Public Service Commission, my left nipple hurts. Can we have a rate increase? How bad does it hurt? About 22% worth. Oh, okay, can you get by if it's only 21%? Ah, we'll try to figure out something. Okay. note from Gerald. I'm very proud of you, Bob. You minded your P's and Q's and motherfuckers. Oh, that helps. Let's see. The frackers did the job layoffs. The frackers brought those about because gas is cheaper than coal. And the mine closures, same.
Going forward, states should not be forced to bear the brunt of other costly EPA regulations before legal challenges are complete. I think the EPA should be taken out and set on fire. I will continue to work with my colleagues to advance policies that protect reliable and affordable energy, put jobs and our economy first, and little children who want to breathe dead last. And I do mean dead.
Oh, hell yeah, Gerald. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time breathing, and I forgot to reach for the cowbell. Everybody gangs up. Come on, give Gerald a cowbell! Yeah, well, let me get my breath, okay? Ray pointing out, you're a president and a founder now? Makes me want to touch myself. I don't want to know about it. Well, I am. I am. One of these days, Bo and I will sit down and write the story of the founding of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign, and it begins in Manassas, Virginia, in late September 2011. There may have been a swig of bourbon involved. A toasting, if you will. Okay. But no more self-touching. Okay? I mean, not that you can't, I just don't want to know about it. Stockton Larry asking, who knows the origin of mind your P's and Q's? I did, and I can't bring it to mind. Oh, here's something fun. We got about 15 minutes left in the program. And remember, there is, in fact, a $200 matching offer. And it will go away as of the beginning of the program tomorrow night. Because this is the Our Cup Runneth Over Challenge, courtesy of Thomas. It is his willingness to match to the tune of $200 over and above any whenever we meet the challenge. So we met the $300 challenge this evening. That means the $200 Our Cup Runneth Over challenge is on the clock. There will be another challenge tomorrow evening, which will take it off the clock. So that's how that works. Ron, with a little advice to Ray, stop helping, Ron. You can touch as much as you want, just don't tie yourself up first. That's just weird. And take it from the dead Baptist minister in Montgomery, Alabama. Wetsuits are not advisable either. Well, we're laughing together then, Gerald. Gerald says, I'm laughing my ass off here. I keep laughing. Because, did you know, did you hear about this? So, a columnist who is apparently a film critic for the New York Post, named Lou Luminick, wrote a column in which he pointed out that maybe a disclaimer or two, a sticker. Remember when Tipper Gore wanted stickers on rock and roll records? Maybe a warning, parental advisory, racism involved on the front of Gone with the Wind might be in order. Being how it sort of glorifies the old slavery South and all of that. This happened last week. Well, by the 26th, Friday, it had gotten his column had gotten completely out of hand. It went viral to a degree, I suppose. Because when he suggested that maybe it might be good to point out the racist overtones present in Gone with the Wind, apparently all the Confederates who read him went nuts. And, of course, went nuts is a relative term. As of 9 a.m. Friday, June the 26th, he writes, Gone with the Wind was the overall best-selling Blu-ray feature film on Amazon's U.S. website. amazingly outselling such new releases as Fifty Shades of Grey, which it displaced at the top of Amazon's romance films list. I guess that's a good thing. And American Sniper, ditto in the military war category. Gone with the Wind went zooming back up when the neo-Confederates thought that maybe it might get to be as hard to get their movie about that lovely Scarlet and Miss Millie and Captain Rhett and oh Ashley, with voiceovers by Lindsey Graham, John. They figured it was going to be as hard to get their hands on Gone with the Wind as it was going to, because, you know, Amazon quit selling Confederate flags. And so they just made a bunch more money for Warner Brothers. And it's like free money because the production costs in a DVD are next to nil. The packaging is next to nil. The actors were all paid, and they're all dead. And so, free money. Lou Luminick writes, "It seems a lot of people who ran to Amazon's virtual store are actually afraid that the film will be banned or pulled from circulation due to my column. And they haven't been shy about telling me about this concern in dozens of angry tweets." He doesn't even mention poorly spelled, but you know they were. And emails. Yeah, again, ditto. Poorly spelled. No grammar. Lots of capitals. "No matter how many times I have tried to correct this erroneous impression on social media." What made it go viral? Well, the goobers over at that website that rhymes with light and fart declared that this guy was some sort of simpering, you know, commie pinko. For having said that, yes, indeed, Gone with the Wind contains a bunch of racist imagery. And, of course, the people who read that website that rhymes with light and fart it was a big damn deal when it came out. I mean, it was in color. It was the first use of a cuss word, damn, in a film. Vivian Leigh is just beautiful. Etc., etc. But when you get right down to it, it's kind of a shitty movie. And it goes on and on forever and forever. And glorifies the Confederacy. And sort of nods approvingly at slavery. With, of course, stereotyped casting. Mammy. And Prissy. And, of course, the moment when Scarlet tells them, "I'll sell you south." But over at that site that rhymes with left and fart, they went all zomg, and in just 3 days, the left's mob mentality took us from removing the rebel flag from a state capital to banning Gone with the Wind. And they pulled a quote from Luminick's column. "He isn't beating around the bush. He's serious about calling on Warner Brothers to smother the movie outside of museum screenings. God, those people. A self-imposed ban, but a ban nonetheless. This is akin to book burning." No, it's not even akin. No. It wouldn't even be invited to the family reunion of book burning. Granted, Luminic's not suggesting government agents kick in your door, search your house, and burn your copy of Gone with the Wind. Maybe in another 3 days. Nevertheless, he's talking about removing from the marketplace the sacred, hallowed, blessed, profit-driven marketplace, the most treasured pieces of cinematic art the world has ever seen. I don't know. I think there are better movies. I know there are better movies. Lots of better movies. Yeah. Luminic is also assuming the classic bigoted role of the fascist white liberal patronizing black America.
Huh? What is it?
But it doesn't matter if it's true. The people over there at that website that rhymes with light and fart. If Blazing Saddles was better, indeed, I agree. The people over at Light and Fart, they're not going to let facts get in the way. Maybe they'll send that video guy James O'Keefe. Maybe they'll send him to try to get Lou Luminic to say something nasty about Andrew Lightfart. Yeah. And by the way, nobody's going to ban Gone with the Wind. But if Warner Brothers has any common decency about them, they will send a thank you note and maybe a nice bottle of scotch to Lou Luminic. I think they can afford it, given what they just made off of a column that he wrote that he didn't say to ban the movie. But you know, that whole banned in, fill in the blank, still works like gangbusters. And I'm happy to announce that $50 of Thomas's Our Cup Runneth Over challenge has been met. 150 to go. So hopefully between now and the beginning of airtime tomorrow evening, the other 150 will be met. So it's been a delightful Moran Monday for me. I hope it has been for you as well. Thank you to everyone who helped meet Barbie and Chris's $300 challenge this evening. We're off and running. We can do this. Because, well, shoot, if we don't, I don't know if anything, I don't know if the internet will be on when I get back. You'll have that. But we're off and running. So thank you very kindly, all of you, for all of your help. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. Yes, and always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.